It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark, and I am exhausted. I have good reason for it, though, because this week we did two live podcasts. We were at the Geek Bar Beta talking about the worst comic book movies ever on Tuesday. And then on Saturday, we were at ValorCon talking about Batman and video games. Both of them went great. Both of them were recorded. And you will hear both of them in the coming weeks. But it didn't leave a lot of time for sleep. Before you hear either of them, though, we also have a Skype call, and that's what we're going to hear today. You remember Michelle Saleo? She was on about a month or two ago, the star of Staten Island Lost. She talked about how that show started and how it went away. She's also the daughter of classic artist Dom Saleo, so she knows a lot about conventions. Well, last week when we were talking about New York Comic Con, we said we had people on the floor who were going to talk about it. Michelle was one of those people. So we got a chance after the convention wrapped up to talk about it. What you'll hear is her experiences at New York Comic Con, but also a lot about Halloween and kids, and that's also appropriate. So let's talk to Michelle.
I've been going to Comic Con since I'm a baby. My dad was into comic books. Like, my dad, you know, he did Casper the Friendly Ghost and Richie Rich.
Right.
For...
Would take you to conventions?
Yeah, because he was on the panels.
Oh, that's cool.
So, when I was a kid, and then we stopped, like, after he left. But when I was a kid, it was, like... It was very, way more hardcore in a way that it was like a comic book convention.
Oh, yeah. Like, it was like one ballroom in a hotel.
Yeah. And I remember this one time we went and The Wall had just come out from Pink Floyd.
The movie or the album?
The movie.
Okay.
And there were these frightening hammers everywhere. I remember being really frightened by it and like being totally confused by all of this like military, you know, imagery, because that was like the new hot thing that and at that time Felix the Cat, I think, was around, and like that rock and roll movie where cartoons were now becoming adult themed.
Fritz the Cat.
Is that what it was?
Felix the Cat was still pretty nice.
Oh, Felix, that's right. I'm sorry. I still have Comic-Con in my head. Felix was everywhere. Okay, Fritz. And then wait, what was the rock and roll movie too?
Heavy Metal.
Was that the cartoon?
Yeah, there was Heavy Metal, which was based on the magazine, and then there was American Pop. Which was like about like a kid growing up and getting in a band, but it was animated.
That's the one.
Yeah, I saw all of these movies you mentioned. I saw when we were at Brooklyn College because they were on like TBS at 2 a.m. and I had insomnia through all of Brooklyn College.
Aww. Well, no, I was a kid watching these because it was part of the culture of my parents, and I remember being like, I don't like this.
You weren't supposed. I remember seeing like just the animated Lord of the Rings when I was a kid, and I couldn't handle it.
Me too. And I was like, this is terrible.
Creepy.
But you know what? In the 70s, though, there was a huge culture of like bringing the creepiness of the world to children. If you remember, like, you know, Sendak was not into, you know, cutifying the world for kids. You know, and it was really huge in the 70s and Really Rosie about, you know, remember Really Rosie?
Yeah, I do remember Really Rosie.
Maurice Sendak illustrated that whole thing. And there was that whole song about the kid who died choking on a chicken bone. And I'm like, you know, I think back at the 70s and I'm like, what were they trying to do to us?
Well, it was like the original Grimm's Fairy Tales, where basically every one of the original Grimm's Fairy Tales, like the kid like dies. Like,
yeah.
Dies and Cinderella dies.
And
they were all cautionary tales, and all of the tales were like, don't wander out in the woods, don't go too far from the house, because they were all stories for one lone cabin in the woods surrounded by actual wolves.
Yeah.
So they were all cautionary tales about, like, don't let horrible things happen to you. And I think in the 70s there was an urban sense.
Yeah.
And then once we got to the 90s, then it was helicopter parenting and just safety laws everywhere.
Wow.
We didn't kind of need those cautionary tales anymore.
Because the crap was scared out of us when we were kids.
Yeah.
I mean, who wouldn't? And I love people like, you know, when I grew up in the 70s, our playgrounds would have killed you. And I want to be like, you know, I had friends who lost their fingers on the 4th of July.
Yeah, there was broken glass on everything.
Everywhere. We all cut our heads and faces open. You be the first one. Go ahead. You put your kid out there on the broken glass. You be the pioneer of the new 1970s way of raising kids. I'll keep my kids with their helmets over here.
Yeah, I have 10 stitches in my face for burning around the projects when I was 5.
Because
I tripped and I fell on a pole that was like just had that big screw top and it was sticking straight out of the ground.
Oh,
I landed on it just right. And that doesn't happen now. That doesn't happen to my kid. You know, my son swallowed a paperclip. That's the worst thing he ever did.
And those are smooth.
Yeah, well, except for that one edge. And right. all we did was we kept taking him into the hospital and putting him in x-rays and we could watch it travel.
Right.
That was 10 days of that.
So anyway, so Comic-Con, this was my second year in the modern Comic-Con era.
Okay, did you go last year or did you go a while ago?
No, I didn't go last year, I went the year before.
Okay, so yes. I went the first 6 years. I went really until I moved to Chicago, so I don't think we overlapped at all, but it's been doubling in size every single year. And last year they said they had more people than San Diego. That was disputed, but just the fact that they even came close means just gargantuan.
So the first time I went on Thursday, and Thursday is like the press day, and the kids had a ball. We saw one panel, like I saw with Neil Adams. I think I told you about that, because Neil Adams and my dad went to school together.
Yeah, Neil Adams is a very interesting person.
Yes. Very. So, but that day, the kids absolutely loved it. But like, you know, as an adult, I was just like, well, there's really nobody here I want to meet, because it was really industry people and, you know, no pop culture people, you know, to meet. But, you know, the kids kind of liked being able to get merchandise they couldn't get anywhere else and, you know, playing with video games that they couldn't play. And it was not very crowded. This year I went on Sunday. It was a more family friendly day. And I'll say this, like, okay, first of all, it is very highly organized as far as entering and getting around. You know, there's not long lines. At least I didn't experience any long lines getting in. You pre-register your pass. So there's not, you know, there's entrances everywhere and they're all secure.
Right. Reed Pop does a really fantastic job. They expanded out to Chicago and they do C2E2 here every year.
They
do just as good a job in Chicago as they do in New York.
I mean, it's a huge amount of people that you have to regulate and make sure that nobody's stealing, you know, these tickets, that they aren't counterfeit, that they're secure, you know. They do have to search everyone. I mean, and it's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people coming in every day, and it was not crowded at all getting in. And there's all of these entrances, and it's the Javits Center,
right.
You know. So
now is it all of the Javits Center at this
point? Yeah.
Yeah, because it used to be, they used to have like a trade show in half of it. They'd just been like getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And this is the first time hearing that it's the entire convention.
I think, wait, let me think. The back of it, because if I remember the auto show correctly, the auto show, I think you enter on the water side.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't been to the auto show in like 10 years though. But I don't think that there was any stuff on the water side. Although I don't know if I could have made my way down there.
Well, I think they did use the upstairs, and that goes out to the water side. There's like a
balcony. Yeah, then definitely.
Yeah.
Because I was like all over upstairs. I didn't even get to downstairs because they did have downstairs available as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we get in, and it's, you know, zip, zip, no problem getting in. I was late because I was New York traffic and couldn't find a spot and whatever. So I ran to the panel on Goosebumps. So it was R.L. Stein and Jack Black and the director of the movie and three stars, the three little kid stars.
Cool.
It was a great panel and lots of really good questions. And R.L. Stein was awesome. He talked about the movie. And the movie looks typical, I'll say that.
Yeah, it's coming out tomorrow as we're doing this. And Ben mentioned it. And I'm like, eh. And actually where I work, we're doing a product tie-in. So I've been looking at that ventriloquist dummy with the paint ripped off his nose for about 3
Slappy.
Months. I don't know either.
Like, I get the, I think it was a cool idea that they used all of the books to make one movie, but at the same time, they use that same formula with, like, the three kids, like, the cool kid, the geeky kid, and the girl. Mm-hmm. Like, it's always that. It's always the cool kid, the geeky kid, and the girl, and, like...
Well, it's the hero, the sidekick, and the love interest.
But like,
they don't kiss. But that's, yeah, it's Splash is what it is.
Yes.
It's Daryl Hannah and John Candy, every kid's movie.
Yes. And it's like, I don't know. So I can't pass judgment. I saw three very long extended clips. It looked very thrilling and exciting. You know, so that was a really nice benefit of the panel, that you got to see like these really, you know, extended clips and listen to Jack Black talk about, you know, how he prepared. And R.L. Stine was, you know, quite an animated fellow, I have to say, for an author who writes scary children's books. I found him to be pretty funny, you know?
Yeah, they get more publishing people because it's New York more than some of the other ones. I remember when Ben was little, I guess this is 2008, Mo Willems had like, gave a reading on like the second stage on Sunday, and he was like really animated and loud and jumping around, and it was great.
I think you can find him around. I think he does readings like around in Brooklyn too.
Yeah, I think he lives in New York. He actually did a lot of Elmo's World. He did a lot of the design for Elmo's World in the 90s.
See, that makes sense.
And you know, Sesame Street's always been in New York.
Yes.
So I think he's around. Well, publishing is still so strong in New York City.
Yeah.
And that's why it was such a big deal when DC Comics moved out to Los Angeles this year.
Oh. Because I'm not into the comic scene.
Yeah, I know. You mentioned that.
It's a shame.
It was a big deal. Well, they wanted to get closer to Warner Brothers so they could kind of get their movies in shape. But really, they were leaving the publishing center of America.
Well, isn't that symbolic though?
Yeah. Yes, it is. And they lost a lot of people. It was like a 2-year process. Mm. A lot of guys jumped ship and went to Marvel because they don't want to leave New York.
Yeah, because they don't want to be in the movie business. You know, that's really
it's basically the pop culture business.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a part of me that feels like the movies are destroying everything, and then because I don't think that corporations should be making movies. But on the other hand,
studios are owned by corporations. That's a problem.
But that was a big mistake. Like, that's the problem, right? Because now
it became corporations. Disney was founded as an animation studio, but it's a huge corporation now.
True.
You know, it's like GE or Sony. But
that's why I'm saying, like, what is GE making movies for?
Because
they just took the guts out of it. I know, but I don't know. It makes me sad. But then again, I'm like, well, it did make movies have way bigger budgets than they ever did, and now you have better movies, kind of, visually, coming out of it.
Well, we couldn't make the superhero movies we're making now. When we were kids, you could make the Tim Burton Batman, which is one street of Gotham City in a rubber suit, or you can make Superman, which is Christopher Reeve in tights with a blue screen. That's as much as you could do.
That's true. But
I love those movies, but you can't compare that to Avengers Age of Ultron.
No, you cannot. But like, and this is what my dad says. My dad, which I promise I'll get him to talk to you one day once he figures out the technology.
He is very, very welcome. It took my dad 4 years. And actually, he had to be here in this room for me.
That's funny. My dad really kind of resented the TV show Batman because he felt that the comic books were fascinating, really imaginative stories that needed to be respected and told from a place of respect, you know? Mm-hmm. So when Superman came out, he really liked it because he felt like this was a movie that took itself seriously. It wasn't silly. It wasn't a silly movie the way that Batman was a silly television show.
Right.
So now, as the comics are being made into movies that really do take themselves seriously and really do create like huge budget blockbuster movies, you know, as money is coming into them, they are paying attention to the stories. They are giving credit to the writers, you know, which is really where the heart of the movies are, you know. And you know, if you want a good movie, it all begins and ends with the story, as we can see with what just happened with Pan over the weekend.
Yeah, that bombed.
Oh my God! Because apparently there was no story.
Oh really?
They had a good idea, but then it was everywhere. It just didn't know where to go.
Yeah, the thing that bothered me about that movie was everybody was talking about Hugh Jackman's performance, and it looked like they made up Hugh Jackman to look like Tom Hiddleston. Hmm. And every time I saw him, I'm like, oh look, Loki's in this movie.
Yes. Yes, definitely. He was unrecognizable.
Yeah,
I didn't understand what they were trying to accomplish there. And then there's an example of like a lot of money with no story.
Right, and that's always the problem, is you keep tweaking and tweaking and tweaking, and everything that goes in, something's got to come out.
Yeah, see, the opposite of good is better. That's the problem.
Ah, that, I haven't heard that. That's good. You like that's better. I don't know.
Okay, so then we run. Okay, after we go to the panel, then we had to go meet. Forgive me. Whose voice is the Jake the dog from Adventure Time?
Oh, John DiMaggio.
Okay, so he was there.
He's also Bender on Futurama.
On Futurama, right? Yeah. Go see him.
He's a Jersey guy.
Yeah, yeah, and he was like totally down. You know, of course he's down to earth because like he's Jake the dog, so like he's that's it. And he looks just like Jake, which I love when that happens.
Yeah, I found that voiceover actors are not pretentious in the least, because I think they're making like middle class wages.
No, but if you've watched the Simpsons panel on inside the Actors Studio, they're like, this is the greatest job in the entire world, and I wouldn't give it up for anything.
Yeah,
you know, so maybe they're just really happy people.
Yeah, it's low pressure, and it's like it's low stakes and high reward,
and you can do it.
Many jobs that are like that,
right? Because I know some of the cast of Bob's Burgers is never really together. They do some voices are in the East Coast and some are in the West,
right?
Because I know this about Bob's Burgers because I'm a twisted freak for them.
Well, that was something you neglected to mention. You also went as Linda Belcher.
I dressed as Linda Belcher.
And so, that was something I was wondering.
What I was going to dress like?
No, well, you had your moment in the public eye.
Yeah.
In the 2008 New York Comic Con, we did a stand-up show on the floor of the Comic Con. And I was there. Matt McCarthy was on one of the shows. And he was the sidekick on the Pete Holmes show later. But at the time, he was doing these Verizon commercials. And I could not walk 10 feet with him without him getting stopped.
Right.
As a Verizon guy. I was wondering if anyone recognized you on the floor with hundreds of thousands of people looking for people on TV. But then again, you were dressed as Linda Belcher. Yeah.
Yes, I was Linda Belcher.
Did anybody stop you?
As Linda Belcher, yes. All day. We didn't get to walk more than 10 feet. Well, because it wasn't just that I was Linda Belcher. My daughter was Louise and my son was Eugene.
Yeah. So it was the three of you?
Yeah.
I was so hoping your husband was Bob and I didn't get that picture.
I know. He couldn't come. He couldn't come. I felt bad, but he wasn't going to be Bob either. My husband has a strict policy when it comes to costumes. He can't look ridiculous and he can't be uncomfortable. So
wear a costume.
It really just brings it down to t-shirts and yeah, which is not fun.
I just found out I'm playing a show on Halloween, which means I have to scrap my Adam West Batman idea.
Why do you have to scrap it?
Because it's at the same time as the costume party we were going to go to. So I can either go do a show as Bono or go to a party as Batman. It's a very, very hard decision that I have to make at 43 years old.
You know, until you said that, I was really seriously, you know, sympathizing. I was like, wow, I don't know what I would do in that situation. And then you were like, I'm 43. And I was like,
you shouldn't do any of it, really. Drive your car to work and keep your mouth shut.
So leading up to Comic-Con, like I had to make these three costumes because they're not readily available. You know, it's not like something you could go into Party City and pick up, and except for the sunglasses or whatever, Linda's glasses. So the hamburger costume is available online, but it would have cost $60 to get it to me. So I was really upset about that. So I figured if I couldn't make a hamburger costume, like kind of a mother was I? So I quickly made a hamburger costume and it came out pretty damn good, if I do say so myself. And then Tina's hat I had to make and, you know, was, you know, sewing and spray painting and whatever. I got that accomplished. My kids tell me, what are we going to be for Halloween? And I'm like, you're going to be the Belchers for Halloween. And they're like, oh, no, that's a Comic-Con costume. We can't wear that for Halloween.
Make us something else.
And I was like, I can't. And last year I made them, Olivia, my daughter was Gamora, and my son was Doctor Who. And
which doctor?
I know their names, but I don't know.
All right, what was the costume?
Fez.
Oh, the 11th. Matt Smith.
Matt Smith. Okay. You know why I can't get into Doctor Who? Because it scares me.
What scares you?
It's frightening to me.
The amount of mythology you have to learn, or because there are British monsters running at you?
And the monsters, the special effects aren't even good at all. They're atrocious. It's just a rubber suit, not even in it.
The classic one's horrible. The new ones are pretty good because it's like...
Pretty good? It's like the Great Space Coaster.
No, not the new... The new ones have like a lot more CG in it and shot in high def. It's a little better. This week, there were ghosts underwater and they were creepy.
Listen,
and they had empty holes in their eyes, and you could see the back of their head.
You see what I'm saying? The first episode with Mary with the mannequin, my son made me watch this because he was like, I promise you it's not scary. It scared the crap out of me. And I'm like, I can't watch this. Like, I can't. I'm a fraidy cat. I don't do scary things. So
yeah, you're the opposite of my wife. She cannot get enough of The Walking Dead.
No, can't watch that. Are you crazy? No.
Yeah, my family, both my sister and my father... When it premiered, I said, yeah, it's great, but you won't like it. And then they both watched it and was like, oh, that was great, and I'm never watching it ever again.
Oh, no. I can't do the zombies. I can't even watch Ghost Hunters.
But that's totally not real.
I know.
They just go into a house and shake something.
I know. I know one of the cameramen who did one of the shows on Ghost
He's
Hunters.
Your show?
Yeah. And he was like, I pulled that shade. And I was like,
Why are you scared by that? Because you know the guy who's being the ghost.
Look, I also know that.
Why is it scary?
I know Mike Myers doesn't exist. He scares the crap out of me, too.
Myers does exist. He made The Love Guru, and it was terrifying.
I don't know. It scares me.
He's Canadian.
I don't know. All I'm saying is, like, even the bad special effects, I can't. They scare me.
Yeah.
I can't.
So basically, if you turn the lights down and angle the camera a little bit, that's enough to scare you.
It's enough to scare me.
Because ghost hunters, that's all they do.
Mm-hmm. I know. And it's enough to make me, like, I don't enjoy it at all. I don't enjoy being frightened. There's some people that like love being frightened. I don't enjoy that at all. I can't stand it.
I don't enjoy being frightened because I have enough anxiety just walking around. But I do like monsters. So if I'm not scared of it, I think it's really cool. So I always like old horror movies. Like,
yes.
I loved Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff because they weren't scary. And
yes.
Now that we're in this age of like CG monsters, my wife and I... we're watching American Werewolf in London.
Great movie.
Okay. All right. Now I have no idea
what's the matter with me?
Yes.
What's the matter with me?
You're like, I'm scared by ghost hunters, but American Werewolf in London is great.
Ghosts scare me.
Zombies also scare you.
But they're like ghosts.
Zombies are not like ghosts at all. They're
dead.
But they're completely solid. The thing about ghosts is they're not solid.
But
so
you
people
can't...
that are scared of ghosts... are scared because they're going to come through the wall.
But I can't shut the door and keep the zombies out or the ghosts.
No, that's exactly what you do. You shut the door and then you board it up. And that keeps the zombies out for a while.
Nuh-uh, because did you see Legend? Whatever, I, Legend?
This movie?
No, I, Legend.
I Am Legend.
I Am Legend.
Oh, the Will Smith one.
Uh-huh. They came right through the windows. I can't, you say no.
Did you ever see, you know who was in the original version of I Am Legend? You know who played Will Smith in the original I Am Legend?
There was an original I Am Legend.
There was an original I Am Legend in the 60s.
Oh, God.
And do you know who was cast as Will Smith?
Cut to Michelle Googling I Am Legend.
No. I want to tell you and I want to hear your reaction.
Okay,
Google it.
Tell me.
We've talked about it on the show because we did a show about this person. Vincent Price was the original Will Smith.
What?
Yeah. It was called The Last Man on Earth.
And
it was Vincent Price... locked in his house with zombies like pounding on the door, and he's like, "Go away, you zombies!"
Yeah, that doesn't. He doesn't seem anywhere near as hyped up as you'd need to be that guy.
No, that's what made it so weird because it was Vincent Price just being Vincent Price.
He's like chilled out.
He was like stressed out in this. That was about as much. He was just like, "Oh, go away!"
Like he sounded like he was a little bit more pissed off.
Yeah, because he wasn't getting much sleep. Because they would bang on those doors all night.
Right. Like they were just annoying trick-or-treaters almost.
Yes, he's like, every day the zombies.
They're back.
It's great. It used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it is, but it's really great.
It should have been like Peter Lorre.
And it's like this little Italian movie, and they had no budget, and it's him walking around a house.
Just being menaced.
Yeah, and in the day, there's like vampire zombies, so they're not around in the day. In the day, he gets to his car and drives around.
That sounds awful.
And then you know who remade it in the 70s. There are three versions of this movie.
Okay.
Oh, hit me. This is great. Walker and I watched this in Florida once. Charlton Heston made a version called The Omega Man, and he just kept shooting the zombies with a machine gun.
Yeah, like, I can get behind that.
And he's like, here they are again. And then he would open the window and just fire an Uzi in their faces. He's like, how do you like that, zombies? And then he would set something on fire and throw it at them. And it's like total, and there's like funk music going on while he's doing it.
Like it could have been porn.
Yeah. Oh, and there's a girl with a gigantic afro.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Charlton Heston got into this run, I think because Planet of the Apes was successful, that like every movie he made for about 8 years was The Whole World Has Fallen Apart and Charlton Heston. It's like Soylent Green and and Planet of the Apes and Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
So any apocalyptic nightmare movie, it was going to be him.
Yeah, there was a time where we really believed if the world gone to hell, that Charlton Heston would be the last man standing.
Sure. He's the cockroach of mankind.
And he was always just angry at the earth anyway.
Right, so why would he survive?
He's like, damn it, you zombies and people. You're all awful. I just set something on fire now.
Such a good impression. I don't know. I love American Werewolf in London. I think it's because it was a little bit of a comedy aspect to it.
Yeah, it was. You know, a lot of the horror comedies, I was so scared when I was a kid that I didn't realize they were comedies. Mm-hmm. Like, we watching it again, and we watched Return of the Living Dead last night.
Oh, I don't know if I could watch that. I watched Shaun of the Dead. That I like, but even that scares me.
That is scary, though. There's one part of that that's, like, super scary.
Shaun of the Dead? What's scary?
When they break through the window and they grab the guy from Black Books and they pull him apart. I was, like, mad at that for, like, a year.
Yeah, that it wouldn't be...
I was, like, I was assured this wasn't a full goal. It's the end of the movie. And then
yes, they're all in the bar.
Guy from Black Books apart.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's upsetting. You're right.
It upset me for a while.
That's how I feel about Walking Dead. Like, I feel like, you know what? It sounds like a great show if they just didn't have these dead people walking around. Like, I would, you know.
Sometimes it's just people that don't have enough food and are mad at each other.
You know, I watched World War Z, but.
World War Z was just like, let's see how many zombies can we throw at a helicopter? I feel like it was just a set.
But it was supposed to be based on how insects, you know, come together and I don't know, I guess the survival of the species was more important than the individual. So like they based the way the zombies acted in that movie to how like insects survived, whatever. The fact is, the point is I got through it, but here's how I did it.
Okay.
I watched the last 10 minutes first. So I had to make sure that Brad Pitt, spoiler alert, his family survived.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, as long as I know his family survives, then I can watch the whole rest of this movie.
That's why you can't watch Walking Dead, because we don't have a last episode.
Yeah, I can't watch that shit. So I got to know where it's going.
You can watch the last episode on Netflix and then go back and be like, Rick Grimes is okay. Yeah. Maybe he's not. We don't know.
I got to know that coming right out of the gate. I got to know. I got to, yeah. Then I'm like, okay. And then I saw it in chunks, almost backwards. Which kind of
was like, it would be confusing. That's like watching Inception.
Yes, that's exactly. And then I had to piece together like who these extra people were, because they weren't his family, and like where did he pick them up from, and you know, yes, I 100% watched the movie backwards so that I could feel better about it. It worked. I got through it, and then I finally was able to watch it forward, and it made all kinds of sense.
Well, yeah, that's the way they intended to show it to you.
It's like the normal version. And then the version from the idiot Brady Cats.
Yeah, I don't think there's any test screening of any movie where they go, now if somebody were to watch this movie backwards, would they have a hard time following it? They might. Then, all right. Is there anything we can do about that?
That would be me. Imagine me in a test room. Excuse me. Is this going to be scary? Because if it is, I'm going to have to watch it backwards.
Now, when I buy the Blu-ray, I like to go to chapter 20 and then just hit the back button. Can I have a little beep that tells me when to go back to the last chapter? Because I don't want to see the next chapter whatsoever. For some reason, you're George Takei in this scenario.
I love doing impressions that don't make the mark.
No, I just realized I was halfway into it.
I'm George Takei.
I'm clearly not doing, you know. If it was to be like, well, when I watch a movie, I like to watch the end first. Because Brad usually falls asleep before the end of the movie.
Wait, I like it much better that that's an impression of me.
Yeah, you're George Takei in my head.
I want to be, but I don't want you to say, like, my friend who sounds like George Takei. If you're ever telling the story, just be like, I have a friend in Brooklyn, and she only watches the movies backwards, especially if they're scary. I can't do a good George Takei.
You're the George Martin of movie watching. All he would do is sit in Beatles sessions and go, well, what if we played it backwards? Well, then it wouldn't make any sense, George.
Could you stop?
Symbol, the crash comes first, George.
This is a terrible podcast. It's all I'm doing is giggling. Like,
we're so tired. We're both very tired.
And that's what happens when you're in your 40s. That, like, yeah. It's 9:30 and we're delirious.
So getting back to the convention.
Let's talk about comics and giggle. Welcome to adulthood, you idiots.
This is kind of how the show works. If it's still interesting, we just let it go. All we really have to do is be interesting for an hour.
Oh, God. Okay, so wait. So we're getting stopped. Me and my family are getting stopped like every 10
seconds. Vultures, yeah. But nobody is saying, didn't you have a show on the Oprah Network for a while?
Because nobody watched that show.
That's why you don't have it.
43 people watched it. That was it. It was hard.
People bought my last comic book.
See? They watched my show. They don't. First of all, the audience for my show was not at Comic-Con. You know what I mean? They're like, you know, I don't know what they're doing. They're watching The View, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
They
sent Whoopi to New York Comic Con.
They did?
They did.
Oh, the stupid View. Because everybody has to have that piece about Comic-Con if you're a New York show.
Well, and here's how much to prove that The View doesn't get it. They sent Whoopi Goldberg to Comic-Con, but they didn't dress her as Guinan. Like, nobody on The View ever said, you know, Whoopi was on Star Trek for like 10 years. You know no one said that. They were just like, ah, Whoopi, you go talk to those nerds.
Why didn't she say it?
Maybe she did.
Maybe she forgot that she,
maybe
you know.
She did. Did she forgot she did like 50 episodes in a movie?
Yeah.
You know, Cha, I know Patrick Stewart. I don't know how.
I loved her in Star Trek. She was awesome. She was so smooth.
She was wise, and she was, like, giving people drinks that didn't get anybody drunk.
I know. She was smooth. She was smooth.
She was the smoothest one. She was the smoothest person on the Enterprise.
That's true. In a classy hat, too.
Yeah, because, like, Riker was cheesy, and Worf was stressed.
Ugh. I can't, like, that I watched. That was a Star Trek that I watched.
Really? I watched all of them. But that was a good one.
Because of Will Wheaton, because I had a Stand By Me crush on him still.
What about now with his beardy nerdiness?
I like him even more.
Okay.
Because I like him. He's so normal.
Yeah. Yeah, he managed to get through the Hollywood pretty well.
Yeah, and he, like, embraced his nerdiness, you know?
Yes. Yeah, well, and he and Chris Hardwick are roommates, and now they're like, now they run Nerds.
It's important.
It is.
To, like, you know, come out. So anyway, so not only were we, okay, so we were Bob's Burgers, my son was Eugene, but my son was also, was Beef Squash?
Yes, I realized that when I saw the picture.
Right? So he had the Sasquatch mask on as well, and the megaphone, the voice-changing megaphone, which I promptly hit as soon as we got back home. So that was becoming out of control. So, We met Jake the dog, and my kids were like, I wouldn't spend money to get him. It was like $30 for a selfie with him.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, Ma, no. we're not going to do that because there are things upstairs that we need to buy. And like, I'm so sorry. But he sang Bacon Pancakes with my kids. I was very happy about that. So then we went upstairs to go get some stuff that you can only get at Comic-Con. So here is what I learned. Like, it's like shopping at Comic-Con is very interesting because, like, you want to avoid the hot topic-y kind of places, right? Because you don't want to spend like $60 on a t-shirt. You just get them all.
Right.
And there's a lot of places like that there, you know, like setting up these huge, setups, and there's like, you know, regular just Iron Man t-shirts and like whatever. So you want to go somewhere where you can get like cool, obscure t-shirts, like my Rick and Morty t-shirt.
Yes, I saw your Rick and Morty t-shirt.
So happy about that. And then, so we found this great little, you know, stand, and they had Rick and Morty, and they had Five Nights at Freddy's. Do you know what this is?
No.
Five Nights at Freddy's is an online game that is sweeping public elementary schools across the country. Not the third grade. Well, no. Yeah, third grade. All right, so you're not into it yet. This is, the premise of the game is pretty cool. Mommy can't play it because it's scary.
Is it Freddy Krueger?
No, it's, you're stuck in a Chuck E. Cheese-like restaurant after it's been abandoned and it's haunted. So you have
there's
to like...
ghosts.
There's ghosts and
that's
I can't...
That's the end of you.
That's the end. And what happens is you have to like get through the establishment without getting scared to death by the possessed animatronics. So you have to survive Five Nights at Freddy's.
Oh,
and then you win the game. So one of the t-shirts I got my kids was a Five Nights at Freddy's t-shirt. See? Very obscure.
Yeah. No, this is the first time hearing of it.
Well, I would do some research. If you like jump scares and all that kind of...
Oh, I hate jump scares.
That's it.
I like creepy. I like I like that slowly settling in feeling that something is wrong.
I hate that. I hate that. I'm terrible. I can't stand suspense. I'm so bad at that.
I hate waiting for something to jump. I hate that. That's anxiety inducing.
Yeah, I hate that too. So I don't think American Werewolf in London had any of that stuff. You knew the guy was coming. You knew when he turned into the werewolf and you knew he was going to eat people.
Right, but they kept showing British people, and then you didn't know when the werewolf was going to jump out and eat them.
You had a rough idea.
Yeah, you knew it wasn't going to take that long.
All of a sudden, you're in the subway, like, oh, somebody in the subway is going to get eaten. Like, there's no reason to be there otherwise.
No, because here's a guy we've never seen before getting off a subway. And if we've learned anything from narrative...
this guy's lunch.
That would be cut out in the edit if something didn't happen.
Exactly. The only scary thing was his dreams. I remember his dreams were scary.
Griffin Dunn slowly turning into a zombie is cool. And...
oh, that was so awesome. Yeah, and like, I like how he's decaying more and more, and pieces of his face come out. It was so good, especially for like, when was that, the 80s?
Yeah, it's the early 80s. And that was my point before. We're in this like sophisticated CG era where Walking Dead is way beyond American Werewolf in London, that now I just think that's cool. Where the first time I saw it, it was late. I probably saw it like late 80s, maybe 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was terrified by it. Mm-hmm. Now I'm just like, wow, how did they put that rubber? And look at that latex work. It's like that calms me down because when I figure out how they do it.
And it's lit full on.
Yeah.
It's not makeup in the dark.
It's a great movie.
Yeah. So that transformation that happens in the late 80s, that's like, none of that is CGI. This is all...
it's all like bladders and latex.
And comic strips. Camera tricks, you know, like...
yeah, a lot of cutting, yeah.
Cutting, right. But like, it wasn't, you know, they figured that they could change the lighting and hide it in the dark like they did with all of the movies in the 50s. I mean, like, this was bright light. That transformation was amazing. And that's why it was amazing, because they didn't have CGI. So now, when you see these special effects, you're kind of like, meh.
Right, because you can do... once you can do anything and you do everything the same way...
yeah.
And it doesn't work. And that's one of the reasons that Lord of the Rings still really works, was he used CG when it was appropriate, and then mm-hmm. he used rubber and latex, and he used miniatures, and he used camera tricks. So your eye never gets used to any one thing.
Yes, you're right.
Although The Hobbit just went CG crazy.
No, because there was a couple of scenes there, which I only saw bits and pieces, where Gandalf's standing on a box.
Yeah.
Just to get that angle right. Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a really geeky thing to say. So, okay. So what else?
Your return appearance on my comic book podcast. You don't have to worry about how geeky you're appearing.
Hey, man. The first appearance was about how exciting my television career was.
And all you did was try to get to Rick and Morty.
I know.
Like, just racing through your own life.
How I got on TV until I could talk about Rick and Morty. Yeah. Now I have to sneak that because my son wants to watch it so badly. And I'm like, but you can't. It's terrible.
My son, too, so I have to pick and choose. And, well, like, violence goes right past him.
That's fine.
So that's fine, but it's like some of them are really like weirdly sexual or like just emotionally disturbing.
And
like I'll just tell them. I'll just be like, yeah, Rick and Morty was on last night and you can't watch that one.
Yeah. Usually my son will self-censor. Like there's an episode of Bob's Burgers where a biker chick gives birth on one of the tables. My son's like, Olivia can't watch this. And he's 100% right, because then we'll all just be plagued for days. But like he'll go, he's like a Victorian woman. He will go off the rails when it comes to rigor mortis. So if you're gonna go ahead and censor for your kids, just pass along that information to me so that at least I can feed him bits.
Yeah,
here and there.
I will tell you, I don't censor enough because my entire house, including my 2-year-old, has been singing "Time to Get Swifty."
What's that?
For like a month. The song that Rick and Morty come up with.
Oh, I thought you meant it was like a show.
No, the Rick and Morty song.
Oh, God.
You know where he says, let's shit on the floor?
Yes.
The whole house has been singing that.
What are you going to do?
Anytime anyone in this house goes, yeah, somebody in the house goes, time to get swifty. Come on, poop on the floor. Now, we say poop because...
That's all.
Yeah.
There was an episode of Black-ish, which, all right, I watch ABC Family, where he taught his kid how to sing the Jamie Foxx song that has the N-word in it.
Yeah.
And then the kid performed it at the talent show.
Oh, I saw the commercial for that, which I saw because it comes on, like, right after the Muppets, and we're all watching the Muppets.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
So it was like, it spoke to that whole problem where you're like, but the song's really good. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough now because I don't have any good, like, I really don't have any good horror movies that I can show Ben because he's, like, bored by black and white. He doesn't want to watch anything in black and white.
Wait, so, what about the original Poltergeist?
That might be too scary. I haven't seen that in years and years.
I think you should, because I tried to get, the new Poltergeist came out. My son and I had, like, a trailer off because I was like, that movie's not scary. The original Poltergeist was terrifying. But it did have that Steven Spielberg-esque element of lightheartedness to it.
Yeah.
The first one.
Yeah.
Maybe. But you have to rewatch, because my friend told me that she showed it to her son, and I'm like, but there's that scene where the guy tears his face off in the mirror.
I forgot that.
Uh-huh.
I have not seen that since the 80s.
I never forgot that. Never.
Yeah. So see, everything we have is either from the 30s or rated R. And except for Tim Burton stuff, which we've seen over and over and over and over again. Like, you know, we've seen Nightmare Before Christmas and Frankenweenie and Corpse Bride and, you know, constantly. So, like, we accidentally watched Army of Darkness last year.
By accident.
Well, it was on TV, so I figured it was cut.
Well, see, yeah, right. I know.
This is edited. There's nothing really. I don't even know why it was rated R to begin with.
No, I get that. I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just let the TV raise the kids.
That's what it did for me.
Yeah, 100%.
And now that all we want to do is be on TV.
And I watched Fritz the Freaking Cat.
Oh, I didn't see that till college. That was a TBS, 2 in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was watching that crazy shit. Even if I wasn't watching that, I was watching In the Night Kitchen. Which was scary enough with stupid Sendak. You know, there are those Sendak people, and I just don't get it. Sendak scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
You know, the Muppets used to scare me when I was a kid. They would.
Remember the Phantom? What? He's still on the show.
What, Uncle Deadly?
Is that his name? The one that looks just like Vincent Price?
Yes, the blue one?
Yeah, I thought his name was the Phantom.
Now, his name, in his first episode, he was the Phantom of the Muppet Show, and then his name since then is Uncle Deadly.
I only heard it the one.
He's all over the Vincent Price episode.
Yeah, because he's molded after him, isn't he?
And now the new show. Have you seen the new show?
One episode, the first one.
Yeah, he's like the costume designer on the talk show now. Now he's very flamboyant.
Really?
Yeah. There was a joke where Piggy was in a bad mood and they were trying to figure out why.
Uh-huh.
And Kermit turns to Uncle Deadly and says, "Did you cut all the tags out of her costume? Does she know what size she is?" And then he goes, "Please, I've designed such a web of lies she'll never escape."
That's great.
It's pretty good. It's not amazing, and it doesn't have like that freewheeling like little sketch and song thing.
Yeah.
It's very sitcom-y, but it's fun.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
Denise, it rubs me the wrong way, but whatever.
She hasn't come back since the first one. I have not seen her since.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe
she didn't test well.
Maybe we should watch backwards.
maybe you need to wait for the season to end. and find out if Kermit makes it okay. If Kermit doesn't die.
And like the fandom doesn't like, I see, I just call him the fandom. As long as he doesn't like multiply and take over the show.
No, well, that was my recurring nightmare when I was a little kid, was that the Count would start biting the other Muppets and they'd all turn into vampires. It's a horrifying thought when you delve into it.
But it makes total sense.
He was a vampire.
Yes, he was a vampire.
He had fangs. He lived in a castle.
He was a monster.
He was, and he wasn't a cookie monster.
No.
He was undead.
On the undead, yes, 100%.
It was the undead who was
on the Muppets.
Who was OCD?
Right. That's true. He was OCD.
Yeah, he just wanted to count things. So what else happened at the convention?
Oh my god. Okay, so what else happened? To the so then I. Okay, so then it became. Now we have to buy art, right? You have to support the local artists.
Yes.
So. If this is a word to any artists that are doing any work at Comic-Con. If you want to sell, you should make a mashup, because those are my favorite things to buy. So, like, we got pictures of Minions as Doctor Who, and we got a picture of a Minion dressed as Louise.
Ah, there you go.
Like, that's perfect, you know? So I like when they create characters and they're, like, you know, they crossed over. Or even like if you have, you know, superheroes that do that too, you know?
Yeah.
I like the artwork that does that kind of thing. Well, if you, that's,
yeah, it helps to have two forms of borrowed interest when you're an artist alley. I've been hearing just so much about how hard it is to break through now and break through the clutter. And it's like, it's one thing if you're a publisher, you're getting pushed further and further back because of the movies and the TV show.
Yeah.
If you're an independent artist, you're just like in the corner now.
Yeah. Yeah, and I try very hard to make sure that we snaked around in there, you know. And, you know, you don't want to put your art, like, in these, like, milk crates where somebody has to leaf through them, you know, the way we used to look for albums.
Right, which is fine if there's not so much of it.
Too much is overwhelming.
Yeah, we went through this phase, a friend of mine down the block and I, who's on the show a lot, we were doing all these little comic shows around, and they're mostly dealer shows, not a lot of artists. Mm-hmm. Since I moved here, I rebuilt my entire comic collection. I had sold everything on eBay when I was living in an apartment on Queens Boulevard. And now I had space and back issues were cheap. And we used to go to dealers that had 50-cent boxes. It would be all random. Nothing was even A to Z.
Right.
And we'd spend just hours digging through there. And then I started to realize a couple years later, we were just walking past them.
Mm.
And I realized because I had it, I had most of what that guy would probably have.
Yeah.
And now the stuff I want is going to be $20 and on the wall.
Right.
But it's like and with those big conventions, you just don't have time to dig anymore. You have to see it from before you get to the booth.
And then you don't know if the next guy is going to have something better anyway. So why should I waste my time digging through this guy's stuff?
Yeah. Or he might have the same thing cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the problem with almost, you know, with a lot of the merchandise of the local guys that's there.
Yeah, I was actually feeling at C2E2 this year, I was starting to miss eBay while I was walking around.
Yeah.
Because I've been buying a lot of, like, Amazing Spider-Mans and Batmans from, like, the 60s. So I'm paying, like, you know, $25 if it's not in good condition.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would buy something for $20, and then I'd walk a little bit, and I'd see the same thing for $10. I'd be like, I wish there was an eBay for conventions where I could just put in a search.
Yeah.
The issue I want, and they would tell me what boots had it.
Or just be like, this is my, here's my bid. Okay, you come to me.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was the first time I was at a convention and wished I was online.
Yeah, that's awesome. Oh, so wait, so I get the Mom of the Year award.
Okay.
I get two t-shirts for the boy. One is a Big Bang Theory t-shirt, and it's perfect because it says, I'm not insane, my mom had me tested. That's for my boy, because I literally did have him tested because I thought something was wrong with him. He was a baby. So
not even going to get into that story.
It just really hits home for me. He was way, I don't want to sound like I'm complain bragging, but like it was around the time that like spectrum disorders became like a big thing.
Right.
And he was really smart for a 2-year-old, and just, and he was having nightmares, and like it was just behavior that, you know, why would a 2-year-old have anxiety? You know, he had like these weird dreams, and he was just super verbal and was doing weird things. Like he just refused to play with any toys. His favorite thing to do was like put bolts on screws.
Okay,
so this kid needed to be tested, but it just turned out like so he does have a very high IQ, and he doesn't have anything else, so I'm very grateful for that. So I did get him tested. Yeah.
My youngest one's 2 now, and yep. Sometimes he'll just wait. Sometimes they just do things, and then you're just like, and my whole philosophy is like, is that going to be a problem now? Like the middle of the night?
Yeah.
He woke up in the middle of the night just kind of murmuring, just, and I'm like, oh, this kid's going to start crying. I'm going to have to get up. It's 4 in the morning.
Yeah.
And it got, all of a sudden he just went, oh, yeah. And then it was quiet again. And you know what? I didn't even want to go in there.
That's it. No, forget it. If they're not, you should watch Tim Minchin talk about having a baby because he just nails it. But it was more like that he had like massive anxiety about snakes, and he had never seen a snake in his little 2 years, you know?
He didn't like snakes either.
I'm like, with this, and I have no fear of snakes at all. I love snakes. I think they're beautiful, and I've held them, and I've taken, since this fear developed, like I made sure that he was like able to hold and touch snakes and see that they're not a problem, whatever. But it was just weird, and like he learned to read very early because he was driving me nuts because it was no toy that can entertain him. It was like a whole thing. Plus, he was my first kid, so I wasn't around.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I bought him that t-shirt, and I bought him another a Doctor Who t-shirt, and he's short, so neither shirt fit him. When we got it home, it was like down to his knees, and it was a small, and I feel really bad because like all the cool t-shirts never fit him. So I snuck. I hope he doesn't hear me right now. I snuck and brought them to the tailor, and I'm getting them shortened.
Oh, that's cool.
Yay.
You know, most moms would just say, you'll grow into it. Eventually you'll wear that.
Like, I don't know if that's,
when the 13th doctor is out, you can wear that shirt.
That's exactly. And then he's going to have this dated, you know, shirt that used to look like a dress.
Yeah. But how did you feel about the convention overall this year compared to,
I wish I had more time. Like, although I did, when we left, we had had enough.
Yeah, that's how I feel. It's like you want more time, but you get into sensory overload.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah. I want to see a street now.
Yeah, it became a lot. You know, it's wonderful to see everybody together. I have this, every time I go, I have this realization where I'm like, that was a lot of people in a very small space and nobody got pissed off. And that's what happens when you put a bunch of nerds together, because they're the most passive, wonderful people.
Yep.
And you know,
yep,
you step on somebody's foot and they're like, oh, pardon me.
Yeah. They're just glad you're not a bully.
Yes. It's a convention of people that feel that way.
Yes.
You know, it ended at 5. Like I said, it was early. We didn't get there till like 1 or 2. So we didn't really have as much time as I would have wanted. We missed a lot of the kid stuff, face painting and stuff like that. We had a 3-day pass this year and we only got to go on one day.
Really?
Yeah. The tickets were a surprise. So like I didn't really plan out the weekend as well as I could have. But then again, I was like, if I take my kids on, you know, Friday, let's say, they're not going to want to go back. They're going to have enough, you know, they're going to be saturated.
Be burned out. Yeah.
So I had to pick the day, you know, that I thought they were going to get the most out of it. And the R.L. Stein thing was a draw because my son read all his books. So,
So are you going next year?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can follow me at Not On My Book on Twitter. That is the official Caffeinated Comics Twitter feed. Like our Facebook page. Listen to us on Stitcher, on iTunes, or just go to caffeinatedcomics.blogspot.com. We'll talk to you next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not On My Book production.
That's-